Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
Good morning, fellas. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for checking out the program. Another day, another conversation about what we've been talking about the last couple of days. We'll get into a little bit of sports here and there as well. But I know that, we're still looking at the TV. We're still seeing the protests going on. We're still seeing the streets occupied by National Guardsmen and police. And we're going to continue to have this conversation. Key, I know that you got a chance yesterday to go out in your community and participate in a protest, and I'm seeing them down here in my community. It just feels like, and I'm hopeful, Key, for all the reasons that you said yesterday, it does feel different. You are seeing people involved in these protests that maybe we haven't seen before.
Yeah, and that's true, and I think I'm going to hit the streets again today, but I'm going to do it the right way because LZ didn't give me a protest protocol and let me know how I'm actually supposed to do it. It was hot yesterday, so I put on my board shorts and a T-shirt and my flip-flops. But with that walking and that heat, them toesies wasn't quite feeling good after the end of the day. But the message was sent loud and clear. It was, and I figured it was a peaceful demonstration in this part of the West Valley, Calabasas area that, it was just one of those deals where it was good to see, man. It was – so many young white kids and mothers and parents and Asian families, and they just, it felt right, and it was one of those deals my daughter had been asking to do it for the last several days and be a part of it, and I didn't want to drive into L.A. not knowing where roads would be blocked and things of that nature, and mm-hmm. when I learned a couple of days ago that there would be protests out in my area continuously, then we made a decision that, let's stay closer to home. We'll be able to send the same message staying closer to home. And this is our neighborhood. And I also wanted to make sure, not that I'm a police officer or nothing like that, but I also got a voice enough to, if there was some people that was going to get out of line, I think my voice is loud enough to tell them just chill and not get themselves caught in a situation. And then having a conversation with the local sheriff's department here, the Malibu Sheriff's Department, that has always come under fire for a number of things that they've done in the past that was just not cool amongst African-Americans in this particular area in general. And I had a conversation about that. I had a conversation about, and you may remember this, Travis, and you may well too, LZ, although you were not living in L.A. at the time, but there was a black young lady who was let loose in the middle of the night from the sheriff's department out here and found dead, several miles into the canyon. They let her out of the police. This was a couple years ago. They let her out of the station at like 2 a.m. in the morning against protocol, but they just let her go. Like, oh, you can go now after, they arrested her. And then she wound up dead a mile or so into the canyon. So we were having those conversations with them, and everything was fine. I mean, you only got one or two officers that, you just felt not good about because of their attitudes. But for the most part, they all had pretty good attitudes. We tried to get them to kneel down. They wouldn't kneel. And I'm like, dude, I was, because I was talking to them. And I was like, just kneel. It's not going to hurt. Go ahead. The protesters and the crowds are asking you to kneel down. Just do it. What's the big deal?
What was their response?
Man, they wasn't saying that. One dude was like, I can shake your hand. I said, I don't want to shake your hand. COVID-19 is going on right now. And so it just, you still have this now. It's not, it ain't completely gone away, but it was a peaceful protest, and I'll probably hit the streets again today.
I was worried about you, Key, when you sent us the video, because when we first talked, you were already out, and I had just woken up from my nap because I was going to get ready to go out. And so you told me you were going out. I said, oh, that's good. It's good. It's good. But then you showed me the video and I saw the sandals and I was like, he don't know. That's not how you do this.
But I figured I ain't going to be running from no rubber bullets out here. I ain't going to have to get out of the way.
Well, you better hope not, because you're not going to get very far in flip-flops. The flip-flops are going to walk into the grocery store and back out.
No, but what you're going to really –
the T-shirt are fine, but the flip – because I'm a flip-flop guy too, Key, but if I'm walking more than a couple of blocks, you're going to put on real shoes,
man. But here's what I'm going to tell you, Travis. Having grown up in South Central L.A., you know, we run down the block and race without our shoes on. Barefoot.
Well, that's what you would have ended up doing had you had to take off, because those things are coming flying off your feet for sure. Can you go back to something you said a second ago, that you had a conversation with a few of the LA County sheriffs that when you were out there, and it kind of goes back to the conversation that we were having, which is you just said it. You talked to someone and said most of them were pretty cool, and then there was a couple that were kind of like, yeah, you know. And I think this is part of the issue that we're talking about, that while the majority of them are involved and aware of what's going on, there's that faction of, nah, man, this is all messed up. This is why we have the problems. This is why we need to do it the way that we've been doing it. This refusal to kind of adapt to what's going on, that in and of itself is a little microcosm of the larger problem that we've all been talking about, which is this: there are some people in there that have no interest in reforming the system, that have no interest in trying to do better, that they want to do the way that they've always done it, and that's a problem.
And one of them, you know, one of them that I'm talking about was just trying to be like a smart ass. Like, you know, when we was having a conversation, because I removed myself from the immediate crowd because I wanted, one, I wanted to get in the shade. Two, I wanted to talk to them just to have a conversation. And I wanted to take pictures of my daughter, and I wanted to remove myself. So as I'm having a conversation, the dude's like, oh, do they need some water? You know, any of those people need water? We don't want to see them falling out here. And I'm like, you in the heat, too. What make you think they're going to fall out? They're in better shape than you. So it was all of that little slick, you know, and then obviously mm-hmm. he wound up leaving, and I started talking to a couple other ones, and it was just like, man, we can't control all the other dudes. And I said, well, you know what? That's the problem.
Isn't that the issue?
I told him, I said, I told, what was it, Officer, I want to say Ricardo. I told him, I said, but that's the problem. You need to police him, and he needs to police you. You need to watch her. She need to watch you. And if y'all doing something wrong, you need to tell each other that's not right. And so I opened up my phone, and I showed them two things on my phone, a couple of them. I said, look at this. Have y'all seen this? So I showed them the New York police that shot the guy on the ground and wasn't expecting anybody to see him a couple weeks ago. And they got videotape. We're not hearing much about it, but the police officer. So I showed them. I said, now that dude standing next to him should tell on him, because I don't believe that that's right. And then I showed them the video of the black lady in Atlanta, I believe, or D.C., one of the two cities, where I believe it was Atlanta, where one of the officers was striking a protester with a baton. The particular black lady who's an officer pulled out her firearm on the other officer and told him to get his ass away. And I got to send it to you. It was bizarre. Mm-hmm. I told you guys about it. It was like, okay, that's what I'm talking about now. And I was showing it to them, and they was like, yeah, that's the way to do it. We've got to do that. But those were the cool ones. And so just having conversations, because they was asking me, you know, how could things get resolved in certain situations. I said, number one, let's start off by arresting the other three officers.
Yep.
Okay, let's start there. You start there, then now you're showing some stuff. Let's start prosecuting some of these officers that's out there running people down with cars, doing those enticing people making people mad at them. Let's have that conversation, because you're going to have a good protest as long as you don't agitate people. Don't agitate them. Just, there ain't nobody going to break nothing. LAPD was at Garcetti's house, Mayor Garcetti's house. It was thousands of protesters. Nobody touched anything. Nothing around the neighborhood. They didn't break nobody's house windows. They didn't do anything because the police didn't agitate them. Garcetti told them to pull off.
Key, you're 100% correct. I, as I mentioned earlier, was back out again. Steve was with me this time. This was actually Steve's first time actually marching in one of these protests.
Oh, Stevie.
I kept telling him to, you know, get back, because I was one, experienced, and two, media. So I knew that they would be a little bit more careful with me. I didn't know how they would handle if things escalated. But the beautiful thing is that things never escalated, at least not while I was there. And we marched with them all throughout downtown, got to City Hall, as we did, you know, days prior. And, you know, once they got to about 545, 550, officers started speaking from the steps of City Hall on a bullhorn, informing the protesters that if you are out breaking curfew, you are subject to being arrested. The protesters let it be known they had no intentions of dispersing at 6 o'clock for the curfew. And sure enough, and it's all on my IG, so if you want to see it unfold in real time, you can go on my social media, you can go on my Instagram account, and I documented it because it was important that it's documented. And you could see the protesters are committed to staying there beyond the curfew, but more importantly, they were committed to doing so peacefully. They had their chance. They said the things they needed to say, but they didn't escalate. They did not try to be violent or anything. There was no visual of, as far as I can see, of any property being damaged or anything of that nature. But more importantly, because they didn't do anything and the police didn't do anything, even though we're out there at 6:30, well past curfew, there wasn't an escalation of the situation because the police officers didn't agitate the protesters, and the protesters were protesting respectfully and peacefully.
All right, so that's the good news, the respectful protests, the peaceful protests. Of course, there's always the other side of this as well, including an NFL head coach who said something that rubbed a whole bunch of people all wrong. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. So teams, players, leagues have all been issuing statements as to varying degrees of success. We've seen all sorts of bad ones. We've seen some good ones along the way. The head coach of the Denver Broncos spoke yesterday and said that he does not see racism in the NFL. Here's Vic Fangio, the head coach of the Denver Broncos.
I think our problems in the NFL along those lines are minimal. We're a league of meritocracy. You earn what you get. You get what you earn. I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL. You know, we live in a great atmosphere. Like I alluded to earlier, we're lucky. We all live together, joined as one for one common goal, and we all intermingle and mix tremendously. You know, if society reflected an NFL team, we'd all be great.
So obviously the part that's
punch
getting
him in the face.
No, but LZ, I almost cursed and had to issue another apology. Because I almost really just went off and said, turn that crap off. Like, come on. It just drives me nuts. He says that you get what you earn. Oh, so you had to wait 17,000 years to become a head coach. So you a lifer. So you trying to sell that you earned your right to become a head coach in the National Football League. How's that working out for the Denver Broncos? On top of that, it's not racism. There's no racism in the NFL. Why is there a Rooney Rule? Why do we continue to have?
Why is Colin Kaepernick unemployed?
Why is Colin Kaepernick unemployed? Why is it on a constant basis we're talking about minorities being hired in the off seasons when a year ago no minorities was hired, or one, and that was Flores from Miami, okay? That was one when several were fired. Why do you only have two full time coaches on your staff? On your staff, Denver Broncos, you're the one that assembles the staff as the head coach. You pick your assistants. Oh, no one out there of color have earned the right to become a full-time assistant. There's about 23 to 24 full-time assistant coaches, I believe, on an NFL staff. I believe you probably got two. Full-time. Quality control doesn't count. Quality control ain't nothing but the dude picking up the papers and handing coffee out and some donuts and fax machines and stuff. And that don't count. Strength coach, assistant, that don't count. That doesn't count. Running back coach, who else going to coach the damn running backs? Scott Lockwood that played at USC? Merle Hodge? Who else going to coach them? It's ridiculous. For him to even sit up there, I hope he comes back out and says, well, I misspoke.
Oh, he will.
I hope that's
inevitable.
He could say he misspoke, but he already let us what he thinks. So and whatever
who he is
and who he is. Exactly. So you can go ahead and characterize as misspoke all you want to. We see you now. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Now I know what I'm dealing with. I always appreciate it when you expose your true feelings in casual fashion. So when things get tight, I know where the root of your thinking is coming from.
But it really wasn't casual, because that's really what he thinks. He really believes that.
That's the part that jumped out at me, guys.
That ain't casual. He really believes that.
He was not ranting and raving. He was measured. He was talking in a calm voice. And I don't.
So why don't you
believe what he said? He believes that the NFL does not have a race problem when there's almost nowhere that doesn't.
So there's almost no
aspect that doesn't have issues in this regard, Travis? That doesn't have people in their organizations that are racist. And if you just pretend it's not there, it's silly.
So why don't Vic Fangio go tell Art Shell that? Why don't he go tell Tony Dungy that? Mike Tomlin? Herm Edwards? If he could, the late Denny Green? Lovie Smith. Well, why don't you go tell them brothers that? See what they tell you. Won't you go tell them that? And see what how they feel. Won't you go tell Andy Reid that? Won't you tell Andy Reid and Eric Bieniemy that? And let me hear you. Let me see what they tell your ass.
Tell
Doc Rivers. Call Doc Rivers up. Different league. But call Doc Rivers and talk to him. See what he think.
What's really interesting about what he said, in my opinion too, is that it really epitomizes the problems of race in this nation. Not that he thinks it, but it's about what he's blind to see that's impacting minorities every day. And this is one of the things that I mean.
Super delusional.
I've been advocating quietly behind closed doors for leagues, all the leagues, not just the NFL, but all the leagues, to institute a rule in which every owner has to divest investments in the prison industry system. There are private prisons where people, rich people, are making a lot of money for people to be thrown in jail. Who's thrown in jail at a disproportionate rate? Minorities. On top of that, they also support candidates in political fashion who want to push through bills like stop and frisk for the blacks and showing your papers for the Latinos. In other words, they're donating to politicians to create policies so that more people can end up in jail, and they're invested in prisons so they make money as more people are in jail, and some of them also own professional franchises.
So that
is institutionalized racism 101. And so for him to suggest that there's no racism in the NFL just lets me know how little he thinks on this topic. Because if you're spending money, and this is the reason why yesterday I was so pissed off this notion that people keep saying, oh, well, he plays both sides. This is what happens when you play both sides. If on the one side you're trying to get more minorities in prison because you make money off of it because you own prisons, but then on the other side, you throw some money to help people have programs to keep people out of jail. You see what I'm saying? You're not really helping the situation playing both sides. And so that kind of institutionalized racism on that level impacts all of us. So for him to suggest there's no racism in the NFL, well, I'm not talking about, you know, you walk into an office and someone call you the N-word and tell you, here's a mop to go mop my floor. I'm not talking about that.
You know what, LZ? I think that's exactly right. I think what you just said right there, that I think in maybe his point of view, in his world, that's what he's talking about with racism. That all the things that you talked about, the institutionalized versions of racism that we talked about yesterday and we've mentioned some today as well, he's blind to that. That he, as long as someone is not calling one of his players the N-word in one of his meetings, he thinks it's all cool. Then as long as that sort of thing isn't happening, that blatant, overt racism that we're all familiar with, if that's not happening, then we don't have a problem. Look, our league is filled with black players. People are getting jobs as players. That's what I'm guessing.
I'm not gonna let you guess like that though, Travis. Again, our show is about facts. He got about 24 full-time head coaches on his staff. Just look at his staff. Take a look at it. Google it out there. Quality control and strength and conditioning ain't full-time jobs. You look at Herm Edwards' staff. Herm Edwards, Arizona State, it's all dark over there. Denny Green's staff, when he was in the Minnesota Vikings, Arizona Cardinals, a lot of brothers on his staff was given opportunities. Tony Dungy was given an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator and pushed to be a head coach. Mike Tomlin was given an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator for 1 year with the Minnesota Vikings. Went on to has become one of the most successful coaches in the modern era of the NFL. Has gone to Super Bowls and have won Super Bowls. Lovie Smith was given an opportunity to be a defensive coordinator with the Rams after being a linebacker coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Tony Dungy's staff. Herm Edwards was given an opportunity to be a head coach with the Jets as well as the Kansas City Chiefs because of the opportunity. And even then, it was still racism, bigotry, and everything else amongst coaches in the NFL. The lowest paid positions to take on some of the most hostile players with most energy, the receivers, the DBs, the running backs, never put in the position of power, as they say, executive positions, coaching the quarterbacks, coordinators, defense and offensive coordinators is at a minimum. Very low. Executive positions, general managers, vice presidents of teams, CEOs of the company, of the team, CFOs of the teams, not put in those positions. And he wants to say that there is no racism in the National Football League? He sounds like a damn fool. Sound like a fool.
It was so hard.
He's still holding his job after two subpar damn seasons. He's still there. If that was a black head coach, he'd be on the firing squad. He need to stop.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating only when it comes to him because, to your point, Key, he's in a position of power. He's in a position of authority. He's in a position to change not just one person's life, but an entire family life for generations by the hiring practice. You can create generational wealth if you're able to secure a really good job in the NFL and maintain it for a number of years. You could begin to build wealth. And
I guarantee you, I don't mean to cut you off, LZ, but I guarantee you ain't none of the blacks that's on his staff at the top of the financial gain on the damn team. He ain't paying them at the top. They ain't making seven figures. But if they are, it's very low, where some damn quarterback coach or something, he got probably making $800,000-$900,000, and he giving them $200,000. He better be quiet for he going to make me so mad I've been and went to Denver and had a conversation with him.
All right, we'll continue the conversation.
We don't need to apologize anymore. We don't need any more Keyshawn apologies.
Yeah, let's keep those
because
to
it's
a minimum.
Stupid. It's just stupid, though.
It is stupid. But as you know, as we've been saying, though, but it's also debilitating because it's robbing people of opportunities.
Boo. I hope the Broncos lose every game.
Booger McFarland is going to join us next. We'll get his thoughts on that. It's coming up on The Morning Show next on 710 ESPN.
GEICO knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with GEICO on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
GEICO Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
All right, we'll continue our conversation with Booger McFarland coming up in just a little bit, but I would imagine, Key and LZ, that Vic Fangio is going to have all sorts of problems with his players because we've seen some players on some other teams, Seattle Seahawks running back Chris Carson, another one of his teammates, Quandre Diggs, both saying, is he blind, and calling his comments a joke. How does he go back and address his players after saying something so remarkably
don't
out
matter.
Of touch?
As I always tell you, Travis, it's too late now. You can't reel right. that back. You can't say you miss. It's too late. It's too late. We see you. Like LC say, thank you. We see you. We know who you are. It doesn't matter. Don't tell me you got black friends. You coach linebackers for years. You always hire black. Don't. That doesn't. Nope. We see you as players. Oh, we got you now. We might not say nothing. We just watch. We see you. We see you. In the moment that you allow us to go off on you, we gonna go off on you. We see you. Thanks a lot, Vic Fangio.
Booger McFarland, who you see all over ESPN, joining us right now on the Sprint People's Hotline. Booger, good morning. Appreciate you coming on.
Top of the morning, guys. How y'all doing?
What's up, Big Boog?
Up in the morning.
What's up, Key? How you doing, buddy?
Man, I'm just out here. I got my ankles in my feet in ice tub because LZ had me out there protesting with flip flops on yesterday. He didn't give me the protocol.
You know, that's not true.
He didn't give me the protocol. I didn't tell you.
He didn't tell me to put my Ultra Boost on.
I thought he knew that when you put the bologna in the skillet, that the bubble rises in the middle. I didn't know I had to tell him about that little bubble that pops up when you put bologna in the skillet.
Well,
With
that being said, man, we got a lot of things obviously going on in America, you know, from the Floyd situation to all the protesting to the looting. And just in every single state, there's positive messages being sent. And you from Louisiana, and Louisiana obviously has faced some of its own issues over time. What's going on down there and how are things being addressed?
Well, I think you're seeing the same things in Louisiana and in Florida that you see across the country, man, is that, you know, the African-American community and black people and brown people are just trying to get their message heard. And not only are they trying to get it heard, they want something to happen. I think too many times that when you see an unarmed black man killed, here's the first thing that happens. It's kind of a cycle. There's some outrage. Usually some prominent people get behind it and you start hearing words like, let's have a dialogue, let's talk. Well, to be honest with you, man, as a black man in America, I'm tired of talking, man. Like, I'm tired of the conversations over and over. Where are the actions? Because I live in an America where if you do your job and you do it well, you get rewarded and you're put up on a pedestal and you're lauded for doing your job. Well, if you don't do your job correctly, then there are ramifications for not doing it, i.e. you get fired. If you break the law, you get punished. I think that's what we're looking forward to now. We saw a man get murdered on basically live television, mm-hmm. okay? We saw that happen. It took 4 days for that man to get arrested, and then only one of the four people that were there were arrested, not the accomplices. And so I just think we need to see something done. And I think in the end, if we have a system set up, and I understand the overwhelming majority of our law enforcement do the right thing. They're there to protect and serve. And I'm not trying to hamper them in any way. But if we can come up with something that if a person abuses their authority, then not only do they lose their job, their ramifications, that's all we're looking for is to be on a level playing field that we know that we're protected by this great country, by this government. And so it's no different than any other place around the country, Key, man. Everybody just wants something done. You know, we're tired of seeing the same song and we're tired of seeing the same cycle. So hopefully, and honestly, this seems different now. Like around the country, it seems different for whatever reason. I don't know if the right person got behind the cause or whatever, but it just feels different than some of the other cases we've dealt with in the past.
Yeah, I think it does, Boog. I think a lot of it is, as we go in history, whether it was the Watts riots or the Rodney King situation or where we are today, as you look back in time, we were not aligned with whites. We were not aligned with Asians. We were only aligned with ourselves and our own neighborhoods with our own frustration. Now that we've been aligned and everybody is on board and locking arms, it feels different because of that. And when you look at that, when you look at Colorado or you look at Utah or you look at some of the other places where you've never seen these sort of things take place and they all with us now, we're going to feel different about it. And then on the flip side, you got others that don't obviously see it, understand it, or feel it. Vic Fangio, head coach of the Denver Broncos, we were talking about that prior to you coming on the air. He doesn't think that there's any racism at all in the National Football League. Our league is just pure. There's no lack of hiring, diversity. I mean, but he supports the Rooney Rule. He's talking out of both sides. What do you think's going to happen, having been in locker rooms, when his team comes back and they realize what he said? What do you think's going to happen?
So let me look at the Vic Fangio statement in pieces, because I think that, you know, Vic is talking about the NFL as a whole, but I think he's speaking on his specific part as a coach in the locker room separately. Because I don't know Vic Fangio, but I've been in locker rooms and I've dealt with coaches, white, black, and different. So let me try to put my experiences and try to relate and give Vic Fangio the benefit of the doubt based on parts of what he said. So if you look at when a head coach comes in the locker room and speaks to his team, Key, you've been in a locker room. You guys have either been in or covered locker rooms. When that coach stands up, I don't think that coach sees color. I don't think the assistant coaches see color. I don't think the players see color. To me, the locker room is really an example of what society should be like. All we're concerned about in the locker room is, can you help us win? How do you help us get better? How do we come together and put every effort that we have toward the common goal? I'm going to give Vic Fangio the benefit of the doubt, and I think that's what he's speaking of when he talks about, quote-unquote, the NFL, that specific piece. Now, as far as the Rooney Rule and the hiring of minority coaches, the NFL came out and said it's broken. So I don't need Vic Fangio to tell me that it's okay. I think we all know that everyone has acknowledged it's broken. And so I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, because Vic has been in this league a long time, okay? 30 plus years he's been an assistant coach. It took him forever to get his job. Mm-hmm. And so I think, without getting into a public speaking seminar, he was trying to talk about his version. And his version as a head coach is when he stands in front of his football team and in his staff meeting. I don't think that those coaches see color. I think we're all about the common ground. And so hopefully – And I don't know if all of them will see it, but I think, Keith, and I want to get your opinion on this, Keith. Do you think, as a player, if you're just looking at the locker room and what happened inside those four walls, to me that's different than what happens when you start going up into the owner's offices and they decide who they want to hire as a GM and as a coach? And I think us as players, we're smart enough to see the difference. Yes, no.
Well, I think that the owner is going to hire who they want to, but when I'm put in a position of power, I'm going to hire who I want to. So if I ever become a head coach, which I'll never want to coach and never want to even try it, but my staff is going to be fair, and I'm going to give opportunities because those opportunities are deserved. And if I ever become a vice president, president of a team, general manager, whatever the case may be, I'm going to have people of color around me because – they know how to do the job. But if they're not given those opportunities, then we'll never know that. And I always talk about the late Denny Green. I always talk about Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith and Herm Edwards and Mike Tomlin, guys that I've been around that's given other – Coach Lynn, guys that I've been around that give other minorities an opportunity, opposed to the nepotism game that's always consistently played in professional sports. My buddy, this buddy, oh, I drove the car with him when we were GAs at the University of Tennessee, so I'm going to hire his grandson now. That game is so old to me, it is tired when you're talking about professional sports and football in particular.
I agree that game is old. I haven't looked at Vic Fangio's staff in Denver to understand.
Well, let me tell you before you go any further, Book, I have. Okay. And there ain't a whole lot of us on it.
Okay.
Just saying. And the ones that we are, we quality control and strength coach. And a running back coach and then another position. So it's like 24 full-times and there's only like two that are full-time coaches and then the other two are part-time.
Right. So now you add some context to Vic Fangio's conversation, and getting back to your original question, when his team walks in the locker room and you look at the staff that he's hired, you couple that with his comments, and I think Vic Fangio may need to say something to his team. I always think it's important to understand context, because Vic Fangio made a statement that he doesn't see racism in the NFL. And from a locker room standpoint, I don't think players look at color. However, Vic Fangio, to your point, he is in a position to hire people. And if you have a staff comprised of 20 people and you only have four African Americans, I think the players, some players, not all, some players in the locker room are going to look at him and ask for further clarity about, okay, if you don't think there's a problem, then why doesn't your staff resemble some of the comments that you made? Because you're saying, to your earlier point, you're saying one thing, but your actual actions did another thing. And so, hopefully Vic can have that conversation with his team, because there have been very few instances in locker rooms and sports over the last 50 years, very few, where race has been an issue. Now, we've seen Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. I think we've seen the situation you guys have dealt with the Clippers and Donald Sterling. But the overwhelming majority of the time, sports, man, all we're concerned about, man, is, listen, can you do the job? I don't care. I don't care what color you are. Can you help us win? Because if we win, then we're all going to be prosperous from a career standpoint, economically, the whole nine.
No question. Yeah. No question, Boog. No question.
ESPN's Booger McFarland joining us here on The Morning Show. Boog, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Anytime, man. Y'all have a good one. Key, man, keep eating healthy, man. I saw you dropped a few, man. Keep doing it.
Look here, little Lawrence Taylor look-alike. Don't let Raj get me on you. Now you up there on TV looking like Lawrence right. Taylor.
Thanks, buddy. Listen, Key, all I'm saying, man, is continue to eat healthy, man. Don't let the gut come in there, man. Keep doing it right.
All right. We'll come back. There's a lot there. And what he mentioned there, what Booger mentioned right there, and Key, what you're talking about is, I want to know what happens when he does go into that locker room and when he does address his players from this point forward. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. So Booger McFarland joined us a couple of minutes ago, and we were talking about specifically the comments that Vic Fangio made.
Crazy up there looking like Lawrence Taylor.
I know.
Boog said you were fat, and now you're less fat. That's what
Boog said. Well, he was trying to offer some encouragement.
That's because Raj started that. I already know what Raj did, man. I know Raj.
No, man, I got your back, man. We teammates. We all in this together now, brother. We can't have that.
Boog ain't seen me on TV in months, so Boog just, come on now. I know Raj.
He's got Twitter.
You know, he said it himself, and I don't want to put words into Booger's mouth, but he said, you know, he's willing to give him the benefit of the doubt when it comes to the way that he runs his locker room and what he sees when he looks out at his players and his staff. Will the players feel the same way, Key? Because you obviously don't. LZ, you obviously don't. Will the players on the Denver Broncos, when we get back to traditional meetings and they're all together and they're in their groups and their head coach stands up in front of them and starts to address them, knowing what he said, that he does not see a racism problem in the NFL, what is their reaction going to be?
You know, having not being able to be in that locker room with them, I don't know the way they would feel. I know the way I would feel. But most players got a pulse of their staff and their coaches even before he said what he said. They already kind of know what he was and who he is, believe me. Because a lot of times things aren't the first in these situations. It's not the first. It may be directed differently. It may be worded differently. It may be said differently. But it's not the first. You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody come out on the team and say, what else did you expect? I've seen him do some things that made my eyebrows raise. It's not the first. You know, the person says all the time, oh, it was the first time I've never done that. No, that's not true. That's not true. You don't go from all of a sudden the first time you just all of a sudden going to do something. That's the first time you ever robbed a bank. No, you stole some stuff before. It may not have been a bank, but you definitely have stole something. And that's the same way I feel about Vic Fangio. He's definitely have said something. He said something somewhere along the way. I don't know if it was at the country club with his buddies. I don't know if it was with his staff in the staff meetings, amongst his peers, maybe real slick to one of his players, and they didn't catch it because it went over their head. But he said something. This ain't the first time. So
think about the situation in Cleveland. The Cleveland Cavaliers coach that had to resign, John Boeheling, right? Says something real slick in the little, in the meeting room, try to clean it up, but it was too late. He lost the locker room. He already was getting, he already barely had a hold of the locker room when he first took the job. But then he said something real slick about them playing like thugs. Remember that?
Yep.
And he could never get the locker room back, and he had to resign. So, well, we'll be very curious to see, how the players respond to him and whether or not he can survive this, because we've already seen this year alone one head coach could not.
Well,
the NBA and the NFL are different, and for all the reasons that we've laid out. The groups are smaller. The players can have, I think, a greater impact because there are fewer of them along the way, and the NBA has different politics than the NFL does. The NFL is just kind of sitting there waiting to see. That the Bronco higher-ups, the people that hire Vic Fangio, I know Vic Fangio hires his staff, but there are people that hire Vic Fangio. That are they just kind of have their thumb in the air to see which way the wind is blowing before they make a decision, or are they going to react to this the way that I think we would hope they would react? They say, oh, no. This is a despicable statement. This is obviously a guy that we cannot have in charge of our football team. We're going to make a move, or do they wait to see how their players respond to it? Because those are two different things. There's one, this is unacceptable, we're going to fix it moving forward. And then there's all right, let's sit back and see what happens next, and then we'll decide. Those are different courses of action.
Well, knowing John Elway, who's running the Denver Broncos a little bit, John will address it the way that it needs to be addressed. And at the same time, he'll get a pulse of the team. The wins and losses will determine the fate of the head coach. Because you done had two basically losing seasons. I don't care if you had three game spurts and won some games here or there, but you've been failed over these 2 years as a head coach. Because at the end of the day, the objective is to win games consistently. And so that part of it will take care of itself. Now, some of those assistant coaches, if they woke, that are on that staff that happen to be of a minority or African-American, they are going to certainly, if they woke, and they ain't just sitting back allowing things to happen, they will certainly step up and say something, may not be publicly, but they will say something to the head coach and the players and let the players know that it's unacceptable. It's just not going to go away. Just believe me, I've been in those locker rooms before when people tried to get slick.
It is going to be interesting to see, because if we all agree, and I think to a certain degree we all agree that this time it feels different, it will be interesting to see if the ownership group, if John Elway, if the community feels as if they can keep riding with him after these remarks, because it is different. And Travis, I understand what you're saying, that the NBA and the NFL are different. Because of, numbers and internal politics and things of that nature. But at the end of the day, they're not different in terms of wanting to make sure they don't get impacted negatively by press. And if people are pressing on them about this guy, just as you saw what happened in Sacramento, when somebody decided to go sideways with something and the Sacramento Kings were like going, we can't keep riding with him.
Mm-hmm.
It would be interesting to see if they decide that they're willing to fight for a coach with a losing record.
Well, let's talk about what happened in Sacramento, because somebody on the broadcast team there said something in a tweet to DeMarcus Cousins that ultimately ended up costing him his job. And the response to that is far different than the response we're seeing, at least so far, in the NFL. That's coming up next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.